Hoarding is back as food shortages hit the supply chain, hiring surge, but workers aren't coming back, and yields collapse as the Fed is set to taper. All that and more on today's show. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today. Because food shortages are back, aisles are being cleared, and this is a huge problem as we face a potential recovery in the economy that could send the recovery headed right back the other direction. Let's take a look and see what the headline is. As people are hoarding, food shortages are the next supply chain crunch. And this story is real, my friends, because there is plenty of food. This was as of last month. There just isn't enough processing transportation capacity to meet the rising demand as the economy revs up. That's right. We just need more people to go back to work. And more than a year and a half after the coronavirus pandemic upended daily life, the supply of basic goods at U.S. grocery stores and restaurants is once again falling victim to intermittent shortages and delays, and people are hoarding. And what do you think will happen over the next 6 months? The CEO Adnan said prices, well, they're going higher. And sure enough, here's a story from today. Global food prices are getting closer to a record high. And the issue with inputs and fertilizers and its implications for next year's crop is concerned. Now, if you're struggling here with what's going on with fertilizer, what is the biggest input in fertilizer? Yeah, oil. So high oil prices lead to high fertilizer prices. And guess what the knock-on effect is? High food prices are coming. And this is a story for the coming year. And here you see UN's Food and Agricultural Organization has said by now the market has factored in most of the supply and demand issues. So that's being worked through, but the market has by no means factored next year's prospects in production. And here you can see the UN's gauge of food prices has jumped and getting closer to record highs as we go into next year. And wheat prices are also heading higher. This as of today, signaling more food inflation, and drought scorched the spring crop and threatens winter wheat. Well, that's a huge problem too. Such a problem that China is front running the story by urging families to stockpile food and essentials amid fears of winter shortages. The state media says a warning was issued so citizens are not caught off guard. Now you can only imagine what that's going to do for the stores there, and wait till Americans start figuring this out. Well, and they're starting to, because it's even impacting their furry little friends. And here you can see pet food shortages leave owners on the hunt for kibble and cat treats. So you can see the story is very serious, because if you look at where consumers must spend money, I mean, things they have to spend money on, you have rent, you've got energy. So rents are rising, energy is high, and next, food. Now you talk about an economic recovery and what it takes to do that. Well, you've got a little bit of a problem, because when those three things are rising and you still have relatively high interest rates, which we'll talk about why they're headed down, you have the wrong recipe for recovery. In a recovery, what you want is low rent, low energy, low food prices, and low interest rates. That's what you want to have. And so what we're going to see is cash-strapped consumers, which I'm going to show you in the data here in a little bit, are going to struggle to afford discretionary goods and services, particularly as boatloads of ships literally are sitting off ports all around the country ready to unload. And who's going to be there to buy them if they don't have the money? But I will save that chart for a moment, because first we have to talk about the non-farm payroll report today, which actually turned out pretty good. But is it all rosy? Well, let's take a look at the numbers. And here you can see non-farm payrolls in October up 531,000. The 2 months prior were both revised higher. So you tack on another couple hundred thousand jobs. But here's the key, something that's not showing here in the headline report is the birth death model. Now the Bureau of Labor Statistics, if you've never heard this before, this is true. The Bureau of Labor Statistics makes up jobs every month. They have what they call birth death model, and they try to net out the number of businesses created and how many jobs those businesses created as a result, and then how many failed, and they net out a positive number or a negative number into the report. Well, had you factored the or removed the birth death report from this, the headline number falls just a little bit to 400,000. So the BLS created over 100,000 business jobs, new businesses and jobs for them. due to their seasonal adjustment process and how they handled this report. But so that's the good news, is people are going back to work, but you're not seeing, you know, millions and millions of people here when we know approximately 8 million people have fallen off the pandemic unemployment assistance program. And what the government expected and what a lot of experts expected is a huge surge of hiring. Well, we didn't get that. And let's look into the details to see what else is going on. Average hourly earnings are up 0.4% in October. That's good. Average hourly earnings on year over year is 4.9. Now you might say, wow, that's huge, and that's going to turn into a lot of inflation, until you realize that the consumer price index is up 5.3% year over year. So wages are still trailing prices, and that's not a recipe for demand. That means incomes are not able to go as far. I got a great chart we'll look at here in just a moment to see. Let's continue on, because one of the key things in the report that I look at is not the overall unemployment rate that fell to 4.6%, which is going to just add fuel to the Fed's taper fire. It's the participation rate. You'll see here it went from 61.6 last month to 61.6 this month. Now, what is the participation rate? In case you're unfamiliar with it, it is the percentage of people participating in the workforce. Now, there's two ways you can participate. You can have a job, so if you are employed right now, you are in that statistic there, or you can be actively looking for a job. So this takes account all the people who could work and then determines what percentage of those people are participating either through active employment or through seeking employment. And one of the challenges we see in this report is that number didn't budge. Now, what you want to see in a booming economy or an emerging economy, depending on where you're at with where what's going on, is you want to see a rising labor force participation rate. And why is that? Because someone on the sidelines who is not looking for work sees that people that are working are making more money. Those who are looking for work are getting a job and making money, and they're attracted back to the workforce because wages are rising and opportunities are rising. So what you want to see over time is the labor force participation rate start to increase, and that means the labor market is indeed healing, but it's not. And why is that? Well, let me show you this Fred chart here, and we've got the labor force participation rate, and you can kind of see that coming out of recessions, it tends to fall, and then it increases. You see it falls and eventually increases. It used to be in the past where you'd see a recession coming down here, and then it would rise, and we haven't really seen that since the baby boomer started retiring. Now, one thing I've overlaid is the velocity of M2, and what it suggests is that money is moving so slowly, it's like molasses, it's just not moving at all, that there's going to be no upward trajectory on the labor force participation rate. In fact, when you look at the two, you see they have a very strong relationship, suggesting that more people are going to lose interest in the workforce because despite a lot of jobs being available, they're just not going to actually get hired, because money isn't moving. And if money isn't moving, that means businesses are not going to have the earnings and revenue they need to support workers, and that will lead to fewer jobs and fewer people participating in the workforce. Now, many of you have asked over the years, could I put the charts out? And I didn't know how, but I just learned the other day how to share these with you. So, starting with this episode, when you go to my channel under the community tab, and I have not uploaded them yet, but by the time this video is released, you'll be able to grab a bunch of these Fred charts. Maybe we'll throw some polls up so you can share along with this and I. Now let's talk about what's going on with the labor market, and what has me so concerned is one thing you didn't see in that non-farm payroll report is that real weekly earnings. Now, when you hear the term real, I always want to remind you it is inflation adjusted. So inflation adjusted weekly earnings went down by 0.5%. Now that's quite a bit. So what that means is even though we saw wages rising by 0.4% due to inflation, they actually fell by 0.5, meaning those who are working cannot buy as much goods and services as they used to because their wages aren't keeping up with inflation. Now let's take a look at this chart here, real disposable personal income on a year-over-year basis. You can see it's in contraction, and you can see going to 2015, it was in contraction, and that almost led to a global recession. You can see it starts to slow and fall and then contract through the back end of a recession. You can see it tends to fall late cycle leading into a recession. Here you can see in the early 90s there it fell into recession, and you can see at other points slow down, didn't make one get one here because it rebounded real quick, but you can see different points that a slowdown in real disposable personal income leads to a recession or a massive slowdown in the economy. And the reason that is because if you have less money to spend due to the fact that prices are rising, such as your rents and energy and food, that means you have less money to spend elsewhere. And again, that's what I mentioned. We need the opposite of that to happen right now. And so for those who are betting heavy on a massive economic recovery, well, this chart there, it tells you it's not likely to happen. Not likely at all. Of course, this will be included on the community tab as well. But let's talk about what's going on with the bond market, because that's right, it's been a long time since we've worn the crown, and we'll put it back on as we hear in front of the racehorses getting ready to take off, because we saw a big move in 30-year treasury yields. Let's take a look at that here. And you can see yields absolutely collapsed today, despite the fact that everyone seems to be betting on higher interest rates. And why is that, you ask? Well, we've talked about how QE suppresses and lower rates, but for whatever reason, and there's a bigger story here that I will not have time to get into in today's show, but perhaps in a future show, we'll discuss what's going on here. And what you can see is after QE2 ended and they did Operation Twist, yields fell. And then you can see QE3 tapering commences, yields fell. And then you can see balance sheet normalization, yields rose only to fall considerably. Now, the short reason for this, if you want the very short story, is the bond market starts to price in a policy mistake. And one of the reasons I wanted you to see that real disposable personal income data is because it's telling you the Fed is making a huge mistake. Incomes are slowing down and the Fed's pulling off the monetary gas. And that suggests that without that additional support from the Fed, that we've got big problems coming. And now you can see why the bond market is reacting the way it is. Now there's a much bigger story, and I hope in the weeks, perhaps even in the month to come, that I've got a great guest I'm hoping will come on and we'll talk more detail about this. But for the meantime, I wanted you to see that and why the bond market is reacting the way it is. Now, as we go forward here, a lot of people still believe the economy is going to zoom higher. But is it? Well, not according to the trade deficit, which actually has now made a new all-time low. So the trade deficit is wider than it's ever been. And with a lagging effect, the gross domestic product tends to follow it lower. So what did we see in the data this week? Imports are rising and exports are starting to fall. And when you see exports fall against rising imports, that means your GDP growth is going to head lower. It also has implications for the dollar, which I know many people, perhaps even you, are saying that no, the dollar is going to absolutely weaken. Well, I want to show you this, because if you take the trade deficit data in blue, and again, I'll make these charts available for you, the community tab, and you overlay the trade-weighted U.S. dollar, and you say, well, I don't quite see what you're talking about here, Steve. I don't understand how the dollar goes higher. Well, what if we invert the dollar, and you can see the minus sign there, you can see with a little bit of lag, it's not a perfect correlation, but you can see that the dollar tends to follow where the trade deficit goes in a reverse fashion. So what that means is we're likely to see a rising dollar from dollars leaving the U.S., heading overseas and being then converted back into treasury securities. Perhaps I've given you a little taste of what's to come, of why the bond market is actually headed higher, because foreign demand is also increasing. We've seen that in the auctions over the last month, and that will translate again into the dollar going higher. So global trade has a big impact on the U.S. currency, which means the dollar should head higher, and treasuries, well, they too should head lower. Some further evidence that we may be in trouble, well, let's head over here to the non-farm business sector unit labor costs. Now, unit labor costs are what employers have to pay for their employees. What does it cost them to have them on the payrolls? And we saw last quarter, this is only a quarter over quarter, so this is third quarter data, unit labor costs surged higher. In fact, that would tell you, hey, that's good news, right? Because that means we're going to have higher wages, and higher wages is inflationary, even though it actually has never turned out that they are. But nevertheless, there's this hope that maybe this time they will be. Or is this just a reaction to rising consumer prices? Well, check this out. Here we're going to over, I want to show you the, let's zip forward to that and we'll come back. Consumer price index in red. So you can see that the CPI went up and unit labor cost went up. Now, why is that? Because if you're working and prices are going higher, what are you doing? You're knocking on the door of your boss saying, hey, I need more money. And they know it too. So in order to keep their workers, they're forced to raise prices, but also raise wages. And that's why unit labor costs are just simply following the CPI. But does that mean the CPI is headed higher? Well, not necessarily, because what also comes out at the same time is labor productivity or output per hour for all employed persons. And that is in red. We'll run that against unit labor cost. And what that just tells you is, you know, what kind of productivity is an employer getting for that these employees that they're hiring and paying these higher wages. And what we find out is that labor productivity crashed and went negative on a year-over-year basis. And what is that telling you? That workers have less output despite higher wages. So you're paying more for an employee and getting a lot less work out of them. Perhaps you have skills mismatch. Perhaps they've been out of work for a while and they're a little bit rusty. But let's take a look at what this means in terms of where things are going, because it suggests that the CPI tends to actually follow where the productivity goes. And so productivity tends to collapse during recessions, giving us an indication that we might actually be closer to recession again, because productivity is indeed falling. Here's a chart that we didn't get to earlier this week from the ISM data, also suggesting that perhaps the economy is slowing. What we see here from Nordea and Macrobond is they took the ISM orders, which are starting to slow, and inventories, which are rising. So you're seeing an inventory starting to build with the whole idea, if you shelve it, they will come. And what that means, if you take the orders and subtract the inventories, that the broad ISM is headed lower, suggesting again, peak in stock prices as the ISM falls, and an economy who's slowing down. So there's certainly quite a bit of risks out there that do not support this massive surge in equity prices or this risk on belief that we're about to see a major economic boom. But one thing that does look pretty good is this week's H.8 data. And let's take a look at what's going on in the credit markets, because banks' credit jumped by $27 billion. Securities and bank credit up about nine. So as banks are buying a little bit more in mortgage back, a little bit more in U.S. Treasuries, but not a ton like they did the week before. But look at this, loans and leases up almost about $18 billion. And then you've got commercial industrial loans, they surged higher. And you've got real estate loans up. How about consumer loans? They're up about $5 billion. So you're seeing everything moving up. But important also is cash assets moving up. Remember, when banks accumulate cash, what do they have to do with that customer money? Well, they've got to buy treasury securities. So you've got that for you going too. So what we take away from today is this food inflation is going to be a huge problem, because real disposable personal incomes are negative. And if we continue to see higher food prices going into next year, if we continue to see energy prices stay up, and if rents head higher like they're expected, well, that means incomes are going to go a lot less further than they are now. That will lead to less spending. And there's your recipe for the next recession. I'm Steve Van Meter. Thanks for watching. For those who enjoy the Sunday show, we will certainly see you then. And if not, I'll see you back on Monday for the show. Have a great weekend. Buy now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only. It's not intended to provide investment or other advice. This material is not to be construed as a recommendation or solicitation, buy or selling security, financial instrument, or to participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Manuel. Personal capacity, opinions expressed in this video that do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Advisor, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.